And the shiur that I'm going to be giving now is a shiur I've given before, but I think it takes it on a new meaning right now, given the situation that we're confronting. And it's great to have an opportunity to kind of go back to the sources. And what I'd like to do is to look at how the Torah presents the land of Israel and why the land of Israel was chosen to be where it is. What's special, kind of, is there something that we can highlight about the lands that the Torah tells us is why Hashem chose that we be living here, that are the lands of, God's land should be this land, the chosen land. And in fact, the Torah is pretty clear about what makes it unique. And especially at this time of year, I think it's appropriate to be talking about that. And it's specifically in terms of the rain, the water sources of the land of Israel. And so I'll read, I'm gonna start from the second source. And this source appears in the context of many, many warnings about the importance of keeping Torah and mitzvot. So in Dvarim Perek Yud Aleph, this is from Parshat Ekev, it says, "Ushmartem et kol mitzvah asher anochi mitzavecha hayom, leman techezku uvatem v'yirashtem et haaretz asher atem ovrim shama lirishta." So make sure to keep the commandments which I command you today in order to be strong and come and inherit the land which you are crossing over into to inherit it. So that you should have long days in the land which God has promised your fathers to give them and their descendants, a land flowing with milk and honey. So I think if I had asked, what does the Torah say about the land of Israel? How does it describe the land of Israel? I think that pasuk of Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash is something that definitely comes to mind and appears in this in the in this these verses, but that's not the verse I want to focus on. I want to focus on the next verse, the next two verses, three verses. Ki ha'aretz asher ata v'ashama lirishta loch eretz Mitzrayim hi asher yitzata misham asher tizra'at zaracha v'shkita baraglecha kigan hayarak. The land that you are going into is not like the land of Egypt, which you have left. What is true about the land of Egypt? So the land of Egypt, you plant your seeds, you water it with your feet, like a vegetable garden. So what does it mean, water it with your feet? So there's a couple of explanations. If you look at one explanation, could be that the irrigation system was one where there were valves that you would kick open with your feet in order to let the water flow. We're going to see in a minute, Rashi takes a different understanding of what it means, v'hishkita biraglecha. But as opposed to the land of Egypt, which is special, which is unique in terms of the water sources, and that's what Egypt is famously known for, the Nile River, which is its main source of irrigation. V'haaretz asher atem ovrim shama lirishta, eretz harim uvka'ot. Limtar hashamayim, the land which you are passing crossing into is a land of hills and valleys. It drinks from the water of heaven. Okay, and the specific term for water that we're going to be tracking is the word matar for rain. Eretz asher Hashem Elokecha doresh ota, tamid einei Hashem Elokecha ba mereshit hashana ve'ad acharit shana. It's a land which Hashem seeks out. His eyes are constantly on it from the beginning of the year until the end of the year. So when we ask, when we look at this comparison between Israel and Egypt, which one is better? Let's ask that. And I'm happy to have participation if, is that okay? Is that? So I just speak, just unmute yourself and speak if you want to participate. Okay. So I think that you can see it in one of two ways. On the one hand, you could say, well, obviously it's going to be praising Israel. B'nai Israel are about to enter the land. And so clearly it's talking about some advantage in Israel. And this is the Rashi's very strongly takes this approach. But I want you to see that Rashi has to work pretty hard to convince us that it must be to Israel's advantage in this comparison. So Rashi says, "Lo ke'eretz Mitzrayim hi," and he inserts the words "Ela tova himena," says explicitly, "but rather it is better than Egypt." Just in case you weren't sure how the comparison lies, it is clearly better. This promise was given to Bnei Israel when they left Mitzrayim. Shema lo navo el eretz tova v'yafa kazo. Maybe we're go not going to enter a land that's quite as nice as this land. Is it possible that the Torah would say something negative about Israel and kind of play on the anxieties that Bnei Israel already have about whether they're going to be entering a land that they'll be comfortable in and will be good for them? Is that possible? So that's obviously not possible. Ela ra'ahimena, that it's worse. That's not out what Hashem would be saying to them now. Talmud Lomar, let us learn. As we learned, the Chevron Sheva Shanim Nivnitza, and the Pasuk continues to say that Chevron was built 7 years before So'an, which is the city of Mitzrayim. Adam Echad Bena'am, one person built both of these cities. V'cham banat So'an leMitzrayim beno, v'Chevron leKena'an, that the that Ham built the city of Tzoan for his son Mitzrayim and the city of Hebron for his son Canaan. Derech Eretz Adam Boner Tana'ev V'Charch Boner Hachior. The way that we build is we build the nicer city first, and then using the leftover materials, we use that to build the second city, which is not going to be as nice. And also what you're going to be do first, what you're most excited about. So since Hebron was built 7 years before So'an, then Hebron must be nicer than So'an. What do we know about So'an? So we know that Mitzrayim, Mishubacha Mikol Ha'aretzot, Shneamar Kigan Hashem Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. We're going to see that pasuk soon. But that the Torah describes, it's talking about Sdom. It describes it as being like the garden of God, like Mitzrayim. So that means that Mitzrayim is a wonderful, beautiful place. V'tzoan shevach Mitzrayim hi, and so on is the nicest place in Mitzrayim. Shahitama kol malchut, shekein hu omer ki haya b'tzoan sarav. So we know that royalty lived in so on. So if royalty lived in so on, then so on must have been the nicest place. In Mitzrayim, which is the nicest country. And what do we know about Chevron? So Chevron is even nicer than that. What do we know about Chevron? Psulatah shel Eretz Yisrael. It is the psolet. It is the worst place in Israel. How do we know that? That's why we have cemeteries there. We have Maran HaMakpelah there because it is the least nice place. But it's even so, it's nicer. Then so on. So we see this kind of like gymnastics that Rashi is doing in order to convince us that it must be that Israel is nicer, is nice, because the least nice place in Israel is nicer than the most nice place in the most nice country, which is Mitzrayim. And then the next Rashi, when Rashi looks, in what way is Israel advantageous? What's better about the fact that Israel doesn't have a Nile River? It doesn't have a constant source of water, but relies on the rain. How is that better? So Rashi explains, "V'hishkita baraglecha, Eretz Mitzrayim, you had to baraglecha literally means by foot. You had to carry the water from the Nile River to your fields. You have to wake up early, early in the morning and work really hard. Because only the low-lying plains get water easily from the Nile. The higher places, you have to schlep the water from the low places to the higher places. Aval zo, but Israel, limtara shamayim tishtamayim, it drinks from the water of heaven. Ataya shein al mitatcha, you can sleep late. V'hakadosh baruch hu mashke namuch v'gavoa galui v'sheino galui kachat. And Hashem takes care of it for you. He brings the rain literally to your doorstep. Whether you live on the high places or the low places or the hidden places, it's all going to get watered. And not only that, Kigan Hayarak, which sounds like a beautiful description of Egypt, again, Rashi is going to interpret that to be to the detriment of Egypt. Why is it like a vegetable garden? She'ein zaylo b'gshamim. Mashkino tober regel ubikatef. That it's like a vegetable garden in that rain is not enough for it. There's not enough rain in Mitzrayim to irrigate it. You have to work really hard. Okay, so according to Rashi, these psukim are all speaking about how wonderful it is that Hashem takes care of us in Israel by bringing the rains to our doorsteps. Other mefarshim have a little bit less rosy view of these psukim and say that yes, there is an advantage. There's a great advantage to living in Israel, but it's complicated. It's not so simple, and it's conditional. And if we look at the Ramban, for example, the Ramban says puts this in the context of the psukim that come before and after these verses. Upshuto shel mikra b'derecha azarot ne'amar, that the simple explanation of these psukim are that they are a warning. She'amar lahem u'shmartem et kol ha'mitzvah. Heed the commandments, and you will inherit a land of milk and honey. Ki Hashem yitei matar artzechem b'ito, v'ha'aretz titen yivula. And here's an allusion to the psukim that follow these psukim, which are the psukim of Vayayim Shema, that we say when we say Shema, that talk about the conditions under which Hashem will provide for us if we do our part. But if we don't do our part, then we'll read on. It's not like Egypt where you could just simply water it yourself. That there's no other way for it to get water. It's completely dependent on the rain. It needs Hashem's constant hashkacha to constantly be watching and providing the rain. It needs rain all year. Now, interestingly, what we know about the rainy cycle in Israel is that it does not rain all year. Right, it rains only in the winter. It rains from right now. We're in the midst of the deep into the winter. It rains starting from after Sukkot until Pesach. That's when we daven for rain. That's when it rains in Israel. It does not rain in the summer, but we need the water in the summer. So it's the system. The way it works in Israel is that we need the rain, and we need the rain to fall in a very specific amount, limited amount of time. And if it doesn't fall during those few months, then it's not that we won't need it later. We will need it later. We have to save enough right now in order to last us later. And if we don't have enough, then we're going to be in big trouble. And in fact, there's a whole system of fasts that are in place. If the rain doesn't fall, those fasts begin 2 weeks into the rainy season. We can't wait until, yeah, we'll give it some time. We'll give it a few months. We can't wait that long. We immediately, as soon as we see that it's not coming in this very limited time in which it needs to come, then there's something we have to do. In fact, the psukim here talk about mireshit shana hashana v'aracharit shana. That is an allusion to Rosh Hashanah. And you could ask the question, why does Rosh Hashanah happen? Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, why do they happen in Tishrei? Why is that the month in which we take stock We analyze our behavior. We do tshuva. We come closer to Hashem. Because that's the time when it's going to make a difference. That's the time when we have to make sure that we're in the right path. Because if not, then we're going to be in trouble really soon. Now is when Hashem is deciding on the rain. And if he decides that we don't deserve it, then very soon we'll know how much trouble we're in. It's giving me pause to think about how soon after this time period we got very, we were attacked. That it was a critical time period. And immediately things, we're clearly we're not where we needed to be. And we're going to talk, I'll talk a little bit more about that soon, bringing it home to today. But I'm going to go back to the Ramban. So the Ramban continues and says, "V'im tavru al ritzon Hashem, if we violate God's will, the lo yidrosh ota b'geshmei ratzon, and he decides not to seek it out with pleasant rains, hinehi ra'a me'od, it's going to be terrible. Lo tizra, v'lo tetzmiach, v'lo yaleba, kol esev b'hareha, we won't be able to plant. Nothing will grow. That if we do what we're supposed to do, then Hashem will seek out the land with the rains that we need constantly. But if we don't, then he will close the heavens. That we're completely dependent on the rains, and if the rains don't come, we will not be able to live here. And the Rashbam says it even stronger. The Rashbam says, "Ki ha'aretz asher atah b'asham l'rishta lo ke'aretz Mitzrayim, kein shita parshiyot halalu tzrichim atem l'shmor mitzvot Hashem." The point of all these psukim are how important it is to keep mitzvot. Ki ha'aretz hazot tova mikol ha'aretzot. For whom this land is wonderful and amazing? For whom? For those who keep the commandments. But if we don't, then it's the worst. Aval Eretz Yisrael, im atem shomrim ha-mitzvot, enei Hashem alokecha ba mereshit ha-shana va'ad ha-kritza. Mitzrayim, it doesn't matter if you're good, if you're bad. It doesn't matter what God thinks of you in Mitzrayim. You're in total control. Whatever you want to do well, you work hard. If you didn't do well, it's because you didn't work hard enough. We're totally in control. And what we know about Mitzrayim, I don't know if I brought this pasuk here, I don't think I did, but that in Mitzrayim there no, there's this idea of like Paro thinks he created the Nile, that he's God. There's this ability to think that you're totally in control in Mitzrayim, which is something that in Israel you're not. You're not in control. Now I want to look at a few more psukim that talk about Matar. That it's not just used in reference to rain, but it's also used in reference to anything that comes down from heaven to send a message. So if we look at the psukim of the Mabul, so the verb that's used to describe the rains that fell in the Mabul in Pasuk Dalet in source 4, Ki leyamim od shiva anochim mamtir al haaretz, arba'im yom ve'arba'im laila. Hashem will wipe out the world by causing Matar to fall. Also, and this in Mitzrayim, to send a message to Paro, who thinks that he's in control. You're not in control. One of the ways in which this was reflected is the Makah of Barad, which is fire and falling from heaven. Fire and ice mixed together, falling from heaven. Mamtir kaet machar barad kaved meod asher lo haya kamohu b'mitzrayim, etc. The hail that came down, the verb that's used is matar, mamtir. So too, and this is in a less ominous context, the man that fell down in the midbar, that was our food, our sustenance, is the verb that is used to describe the man falling is hinanim mamtir lachem lechem min hashamayim. The matar, the man is called bread that rains down from heaven. And interestingly, a few interesting halachot that we observe that hopefully we could bring new meaning to. One is the idea of the Omer, Sfirat HaOmer, where we count the days from the barley, the newest barley harvest, till the wheat harvest. We count from the time that we bring the Omer. And the Omer is a korban, which is the new barley. The only other time that the word Omer appears, Omer is a measure. The only other time that it appears is in the context of the man. That was the measure, Omer lagugolet. Each person got a Omer worth of man. And it's interesting that in the agricultural cycle, when we have when we bring the Korban HaOmer to start, it's really the barley is the first fruit that ripens, and we bring the Omer to start the season, and we remind ourselves of, even though we've worked very hard to plant and to harvest this barley, we recognize that it is from heaven, that it comes to us from God, just as the man came to us from God. And we try not to have the illusion that we're in control and that we created this on our own. And we do that by, at the very beginning of the season, bringing the Korban HaOmer to remind ourselves of the man. Another interesting halacha that I think that this reminds me of is the bracha that we say on bread. If we think about the bracha that we say on bread, and bread is something that takes a tremendous amount of human ingenuity in order to create, it's very much associated with Mitzrayim, that we, the, you know, many of the Melachot on Shabbat are Sidur HaDepat, where that's one of the most creative labors, is making all the whole processing from planting, you know, from before planting, from preparing the ground for planting, through making bread. And when we, the bracha that we say on bread, Hamotzi lechem min haaretz, it's as if, you know, if you heard the bracha for the first time, you can imagine fields growing bagels and baguettes and trees of you know, different loaves of bread. And obviously it doesn't grow like that, but we say that those words because we want to acknowledge that even though we worked really hard on this, we are giving recognition that it comes directly from Hashem. And that's how we view it. Now, the man was a tremendous challenge for Bnei Yisrael. And the Torah in Sefer Dvarim says, refers to that time period and says, Hama'achilcha man bamidbar asher lo yad'un avotecha l'man anotcha u'l'man nasotecha lehitivcha v'achritecha. It was to cause you to suffer and to test you. The man was considered to be suffering for us. What was so hard about the man? You'd think that, you know, having your meals like provided for you 24/7, three meals a day, you know, it would be delightful. And yet the Torah talks about it as being inui. It was something that was really hard. And the Gemara explains in source number 8, Hama'achilcha man bamidbar l'man anotcha, Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi, Chanamar eino domeh mi sheyesh lo papasalo, l'mi she'ein lo papasalo, v'chanamar eino domeh mi sheroeh ve'ochel, l'mi she'eino ro'eh ve'ochel. Going to talk about the second. I'll explain the second answer first, and then I want to focus on the first answer. The second answer is saying that if the man, you know, the presentation of food really contributes to how to the enjoyment of it, and since the man always looked the same, it wasn't enjoyable to eat. The first answer says something different. It says there's a big difference between someone who has bread in their basket and someone who does not have bread in their basket. What does that mean? A poor person who does not know where his next meal is coming from, does not have bread in his basket. When he sees food, he will pounce. It's very hard to act with self-control. But somebody who has bread in his basket and knows where his next meal is coming from can act in a much more dignified manner. It's unbearable to not be in control of your meals, to not be in control of that very basic need that we have to sustain ourselves. And you could see from the youngest, when a child is able to direct starts eating food, they want to hold the spoon. They want to have control over, you know, and they will shut their mouth if it's not what they, if they don't want to eat, and they want to have some control over their food. It's the most basic human need. And the time period in the Midbar where we were so dependent on God for everything was really hard. It was a really, really hard time because the most basic human need for independence, to be somewhat in control, is something that we all deal with. And what is fascinating about, and the man was not meant to be how it always would be. Right? There was a transition. That was a transitional stage. And the goal was to reach a point where when we go into the land, we're going to plant, we're going to go through the whole process. But at the end of the process, we'll bring the Korban HaOmer. We will recognize that even though we participated in it, we're partners with God and God is very involved in what we do. And choosing the lands of Israel, I think that that's the key. The key is that in the land of Israel, we are able to have our independence, but also have a relationship with God. In a place like Mitzrayim, it's almost impossible to have a relationship with God because the illusion of control is so strong that it's hard to see that God is involved. And this, if we look at the story of Sdom and Lot's choice to live in Sdom, when there's a fight between the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Avram, and Avram gives Lot a choice, and he says, we can't live together, we don't want to be fighting, but let's stay in the hilly range that's in the middle of the land of Israel. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. And directions in Israel assume you're facing east, so to the right is south, and to the left is north. And so Avram is basically giving Lot a choice between Hare Yehuda and Hare Shomron. And Lot goes east. He goes to Sdom. He goes to a land that reminds him of Mitzrayim. He liked it in Mitzrayim. And he goes, and even though there's a foreshadowing that the people of Lot are of Sdom are evil, Lot doesn't care. And in Pasuk Yod, Vayisa Lot Enina, Vayar et Kol Kikara Yarden Ki Kula Mashkeh Lefnei Shichei Hashem et Sdom Ve'et Amorah. It was before God destroyed Sdom and Amorah. Kigan Hashem Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. That's the Pasuk we saw quoted earlier. Vachat Zohar. Vayivchar Lo Lot et Kol Kikara Yarden. Vayise Lo Mikedam Vifardu Ish Me'al Achiv. Avram Yashav Ve'eretz Kanan V'lot Yashav. The people of Sdom were evil. Lot knew that, didn't bother him. And when Rashi describes what does it mean that they were evil Lahashem, Rashi says, Yodim Rabonam Umitkavnim Limrodbo. It's not that they were atheists, they didn't know about God. They knew God, but they intentionally rebelled against him. What can enable somebody to rebel against their master, their creator? It's the sense of, I don't need him. I don't need him. I'm completely independent. What do I need God for? That's what enabled them to sin against him. But if we think about, I'm going to segue soon from the Bein Adam LaMakom to the Bein Adam LaChavero, but I want to sit with the Bein Adam LaMakom for another couple of minutes. And if we think about, and this is something that I, when I teach seminary students or high school students. So if you think about, or college students, if you think about, taking the class where there's one major final at the end of the year, and that's your whole grade is going to be based on that, versus taking the class where there's periodic quizzes and assignments where you have many opportunities to review and to check in and see how you're doing. So while we might think, oh, of course, I'd rather have less work and just do the final paper, I think we all know that if you want to be responsible and you really care and you want to make sure you're going to do well, then it's to your advantage to have the more periodic check-ins. And that's what we have in Israel. That's what we have by the weird way in which the rain needs to fall at a certain time, and we have to like be on our toes to make sure that we're doing what we need to be doing all along, all throughout that time period, and that the whole annual cycle works around this, that we have to keep in check, that we can't fool ourselves into thinking, oh, you know what, it really doesn't matter how we're doing because we'll just work hard and everything will be okay. No, we have to check in and make sure that we're doing okay. And that brings me to the Bein Adam L'Chaverot place. Because if we're talking about Sdom, and Sdom, when we think about Sdom, we don't so much think about the religious crimes that they did against God. We think about the Bein Adam L'Chaverot crimes. The Midat Sdom is a technical halachic term for somebody who has the opportunity to help someone at no cost for them to themselves and refuses to. That's Midat Sdom. And this Sefer Yechezkel, the Yechezkel speaks about Sdom in the following way. Hinei zeh haya avon Sdom achotech, gaon sivat lechem v'shalvat hashker hayala v'livnoteha, v'yad ani ve'avyom lechazika. What was unique about Sdom? It was satisfied with bread. It was full of bread. And it had peace and prosperity because they had wealth, plenty of resources. But they did not help people who were poor. And if you think about it, it makes sense. If you believe that the equation to success and prosperity is simple, work hard and you will have. And somebody who doesn't have didn't work hard enough. So why should I care? Why is that my problem? If they're a lazy bum, why does that have to impact on me? And that is what led to the Bein Adam L'Chaverot sin of Sdom. It comes from this sense of independence, this illusion of independence that leads a person to believe that they're in control of everything, that leads a person to not have to care about anybody else. And the message, the punishment of Sdom came through Matar, that Hashem caused Matar to fall on Sdom, and that's how it was destroyed. Fire and brimstone came down from heaven, and destroyed Sdom. And it's interesting to think about rain, how different rain is from having the Nile River, because when and I want to make clear that the psukim that we read at the beginning in Vayayim Shamoah, that is talking about a time when the nation of Israel is living in Israel and is in that close relationship with God. That promise of keep the mitzvot and I will cause it to rain, don't keep the mitzvot and I will not cause it to rain, is not said to an individual. It does not rain on an individual. Rain is communal. The success, my success, does not depend not on my work. And not on my religious level alone. My success depends on my neighbors. It depends on my community. It depends on all of Am Yisrael working together to build something positive. Because it doesn't rain just on one community. If I'm successful this year, who do I have to thank? I don't know. Maybe I have my neighbors to thank. Maybe I have the people in the next community to thank. Maybe it's their Torah and mitzvot and their chesed that I'm benefiting from. And this, the opposite is true as well. If we're not successful, then I have to look in myself. Maybe I did something and I need to do better in order to for Am Yisrael to be more successful. And when we think about the current situation and we think about the terrible disunity that there was in the nation, I think everybody's feeling that. Everybody's feeling that, well, of course, at a time where we're fighting so much amongst ourselves, that's when we're susceptible. That's when we're vulnerable. Our enemies know that, and it makes sense. It makes sense that that should be the time where something has to happen to remind us that the reason we're in this land is to encourage Ahdud, is to encourage a sense of togetherness, is to encourage a sense of dependence, not only on God, but dependence on one another, that we really need each other. And I think that the Ahdud that please God should just continue, that's coming out of this situation, is the right way to go. It's where we need to be. And it's to we need to recognize that everything that we have and everything that we need, we depend on God for, and we depend on each other for. And the final sources here talk about the connection, the deep connection between rain and prayer. If we look at the psukim in Bereishit Perek Bet, Ve'ela toldot ha'shamayim va'aretz bihibaram biyom asor Hashem Elokim eretz v'shamayim. V'chol siach hasadeh terem yeh ba'aretz v'chol esef hasadeh terem yitzmach ki lo himtir Hashem Elokim al ha'aretz v'adam ayit lavodet ha'adamah. So this description of creation is talking about the all of the vegetation is standing terem. It's just not yet. It's in potential. It's just below the surface, but it hasn't yet sprouted forth. Why not? Because it hasn't rained. And why hasn't it rained? Because there's no man to work the lands. Rashi explains, Terem yeh ba'aretz, kol terem shebamikra, lishon ad lo. Not yet. Ve'eino lashem kodem. It doesn't mean before, but it means not yet. I'm going to skip a little bit. V'af said, Tiparesh adayin lo haya ba'aretz k'shenigmara bri'at ha'olam b'shishi kodem shenivra adam. V'chol esaf hasadeh adayin lo samach. U'bashlishi shekatov etutzei lo yatzu ela al petach hakarka. Amdu ad yom vav. So the vegetation, even though it was created on the third day, it was created just, and it was just under the surface. It didn't come out until the sixth day. Why? Lama kilohim tir. Because there was no rain. Vima tam lohim tir. Lefisha adam ayin lavodat adamah. There was no man to work the land yet. So what? Ve'ein mekir b'tovatan shel gshamim. There was nobody to recognize the goodness of the rain. Kshaba adam. But when Adam came, v'yadah shehim tzorach l'olam, and realized and understood that there was a need for rain, hitpalel aleihem. He prayed for it. V'yardu v'tzamchu ha'ilanot v'adshayim. And then everything grew. You imagine like a time lapse, movie of everything just growing immediately. And the idea that rain, and rain, davening for rain is so central to our tefillah. All the halachot about at the change of the season, saying Meshivarach Merida Gashem, saying V'tein Talamat Talavracha. And if you don't say it, then you have to repeat your Shmoneh Atzeret. It's as if you didn't daven. Why is it so critical? Why does it matter so much, just these few words and mentioning this idea? It's because what rain represents is it represents the relationship with God. It represents that dependence. It represents that recognition. What tefillah is really meant to be is that recognition of dependence, that recognition of God's power and how much we need Him, and turning to Him. And He's waiting, waiting, waiting for us to recognize that. And when we and all we need to do is recognize that, and then Hashem will respond. And the next Gemara that I brought here is talks about the three. There are three keys that are in the hands of God, and one of them is that there's the key of rain, the key of childbirth, and the key of Tchiyat HaMitim. And that what does it mean that Hashem holds the key? That only Hashem, we can't control the weather. We certainly can't control Tchiyat HaMitim, and we can't control. We can there. We've made advances in these areas, but we can't control. We don't have total control of fertility, of childbirth, of bringing life. And the Gemara here adds, there's a fourth key, and that's the key of Parnassah. When we talk about rain, and this is very reflected in our tefillah, and the Gemara asks, why doesn't everybody count the key of Parnassah separately? Rabbi Yochanan, my tama lo kachashiv le, why did he count it separately? Amar lach, gshamim hainu Parnassah. They're one and the same. Gshamim is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for our sustenance. And that metaphor, in the Galut, we've taken to mean, it's been kind of, I'll talk for a minute about the holiday of Simchat Torah. That is a holiday that started in Galut as a separate day. All the themes of Torah were basically all the metaphors and all the images, the symbols that we have on Sukkot of the Hoshanot, of the Arba Minim that we take around the Mizbeach and around the Sifrei Torah. We have the Sifrei Torah in the center, and we take these representing the Mizbeach, we take these symbols around them, talking about the cycle of the year, the beginning of the rainy season, the ends of the summer, the ends of the harvest season. We take those symbols and we transfer them to the Torah. And we take the Sifrei Torah, and instead of going around the Mizbeach with the agricultural symbols, we go around it with the Sefer Torah itself. Because when we're in Galut, then our relationship with God was no longer through the land as much as it was through our learning of Torah. Now we're in a situation, and I'm just thinking about this now, about how apt it is that when we, in the situation that we find ourselves right now, where agriculture has been compromised, and you know, with all the workers leaving and the destruction of the kibbutzim, that there's such a drive and such a move for everybody to go back to the land. I don't know if any of you have participated in or consider participating in these missions, the agricultural missions. I know that a lot of people here are volunteering on in farms. Personally, I wish I had the time to do that. I would love to do that. It's something that it's been a dream of mine to be able to do. And right now I don't have the time, but my son, who's in the army, he's in one of my kids. I have three kids who are serving or were serving recently. And one of them was serving in Chel Chinuch. There's not much Chinuch, not much education going on, but they've been going to farms and they've been farming. And there's like a real kind of getting back to that basic, most basic connection to the lands of Israel, that, please God, we should recognize as being so essential to invest in our agriculture, not to be dependent on others to take care of the land for us, but to really appreciate getting back to the lands. But what I wanted to share with you today, and I hope that this has come across, is about the special connection where we feel in Israel there's this sense of God's eyes being closer on us. And sometimes that's you know, for the better, and sometimes it's in a very hard way where we really just can't get away with behaving the way we've been behaving. And God is telling us, you know, we can't, you something has to change. And in, you know, the intensity of that, like not being able to fall into a lull of everything's going to be fine, which is something that I think Jews in Israel feel very, very strongly. And Jews in the diaspora have had longer lulls of presumed, you know, everything's fine, everything's okay. And I think right now around the world, everybody's waking up to a sense of, you know, things have to change. And we can't just be complacent and just think that we'll slide along and everything's gonna be okay. We're in control. We're not in control. And that what we need to do is we need to turn to God. We need to turn to each other. We need to unify. And to ask for Hashem's mercy. Questions?